Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Sudeikis.
And I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to the 30th AnCast. This is our 30th show.
Woo!
Yeah, we need a little party favor noise in there. Yeah. Maybe I'll drop one in.
We're less enthused because Zach forgot to hit record, so this is the second time through.
Whoops!
We only got like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's no so instead of watching something this week, we decided to branch off into strange new worlds and actually read a book. We decided to go for a manga this week. And I had been reading about this title, Go-Go Monster, which has already gotten all this critical acclaim. And who's it by again?
Taiyo Matsumoto, the guy that did Tekken Kinkreet and Ping Pong and a bunch of other...
Yeah, and I love Tekken Kinkreet. That was a great book.
I love Tekken Kinkreet. I love his art style.
Yeah.
Very French Nouveau influenced.
But I didn't like this book at all. As a matter of fact, I was really frustrated by this book. I kind of hated it.
I didn't get to the end, so I wasn't as incensed as you were. I got about halfway through, and I found it very kind of visually confusing. Like, half the time there are these ethereal thought bubbles that didn't appear to be coming from any one character.
Yeah, well, the thing is that it's a whole lot of confusion and a whole lot of vagueness and ethereality, and that's not a word. And etherealness. I don't think that's a word either.
Whatever, we know what you mean.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of vague, and it's all atmosphere, but it never goes anywhere. It's a strange kid who thinks he's connected to this other world of monsters, and he draws them on his desk and everything, is befriended by a normal kid whose perceptions of reality are slightly changed by being in touch with this weird kid. And that's it. That's all that happens. Nothing else happens.
That's it.
That's all that happens in this book. Nothing else ever happens. The monsters are never manifest or anything, which is fine, but the story ultimately doesn't go anywhere. And by the halfway point, I was like, okay, he's a weird kid. What else happens in this thing? Answer, nothing. You get to the end, fucking that's it. And I was just, I was pissed off.
Like,
yeah.
Wow, what a waste.
Well, yeah, and it's just, it strikes me as like this guy had this idea. And because he is a critically acclaimed mangaka, the guy's pretty famous, maybe he just felt like he didn't need to go anywhere. All he had to do is come up with a premise, draw it in his weird squiggly style for 500 pages, the end. Like, I don't know, I was just really frustrated by this thing. And I hate to think that it's because, like, I lack sophistication. I don't think that's the case, but it's just not good. I don't know what people see in it.
I kind of had the same reaction. I wasn't really inclined to get through the rest of it. Now, I say I got through only half of it. That's still basically a normal graphic novel I got through.
Yeah.
This book is very thick. It's library binding. Gorgeous, gorgeous production on this that Viz did. And it just, in terms of the art style, it all seemed much ado about nothing. It kind of has the same problems narrative-wise as Matsumoto's other weird art project did, Blue Spring.
Right. I never read that.
It's similar, but high school toughs.
Okay.
Where it's just kind of drifting through a day in aimless life.
It's all ennui.
Ennui, but this one had, like, macho dares and shit in it.
No.
This doesn't even have that.
No. I can't recommend it to anyone. I honestly
I don't know who this is for.
Yeah, I don't know who it's for. It's $30, and it's a nice book. They did a great job putting it together. But $30 and you get like $2.50 worth of story. That's what I'm getting.
This is really only for hardcore Matsumoto fans, and I thought I was one that's tested me.
Yeah. So, in order to further our top hats and monocles, classy stuff for smarty pants theme this week, we also watched. I finally got around to seeing this. You saw this years ago, I guess.
Yeah, I love this.
It's called The Diary of Tordov Rottle. Brittle Rottle. And yeah. It's on Crunchyroll for paying members, which is $6. If you're not paying for a Crunchyroll membership, probably worth it. You can see this. Yeah, it's like 15 minutes long. And, describe it.
I like pitching it as a combination of Kino's Journey meets Goodnight Moon.
Yeah, that's a good description.
Where it's very this storybooky feeling, little short snippets of this guy and his weird pig horse,
mm-hmm.
As they travel the weird, you know, ancient lands and visit all these city states and, you know, just kind of have these interesting little anecdotes of their travels.
Yeah, it was very BBC-ish to me. Like it was
very British. Yeah,
yeah, super British. But it's a fun little project. It does seem like it was like designed to win a best foreign language animated short subject.
No, it doesn't deal with feelings of loss.
Oh, right. One thing I did think about it was I could hear the subdued monotone French guy with a French sounding voice like narrating what's happening. Like, the flower dies. He presses it into his journal. A new day begins. Somebody should go back and add that.
I would have preferred Max von Sydow.
Yeah, there you go. Or Werner Herzog.
There we go.
Yeah. But anyway, so it's a really unique and an interesting thing. And it doesn't look, sound, behave, act, anything like anime. But it is Japanese.
Right.
So, you
and
know,
it's,
check it out.
It's really interesting and intriguing. I love the feeling of it. It's kind of... you feel like the kid in the library being read the story by the librarian.
Yeah, and I would say, like, and there's not much story to it. I mean, there isn't much to it at all.
Right. Just nor like should there be. It's 15 minutes.
Right, but exactly. But so if Go Go Monster had been a 15-minute short, I probably wouldn't have been so pissed off at it,
right,
rather than a 600-page book.
It should have been at most half of a regular-sized graphic novel.
It's simple. It's like a movie that is just about feelings of sadness and loss for that's 3 hours long. So anyway, enough of that, Professor Smarty Pants stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about, this was a huge week for news after just weeks and weeks of nothing.
Yeah, we'll get into the real red meat with Daryl and Gerald later on. But,
right, but the big one that had a lot of people worried was Media Blasters laying off a bunch of people.
Right, so they laid off, what, like...
Last I heard it was 13. It might be more by now, because I don't think they were done when I got that number.
Do you think the company's done? I mean, we're engaging in speculation right now.
Right, this is rampant speculation. I think they are.
You think they're finished?
I think they're finished. Here's why. What is affecting them is basically the same cycle of what killed CPM, what killed Geneon slowly over a period of years, and what, kept killing ADV, and they kept taking the magic elixir and coming back to life until they finally ran out of elixir. Mm-hmm. And had to, split themselves up. The fact of the matter is, they're in a place now that nobody in recent history, anime-wise or any other part of the home video business, has come back from. They don't have a whole lot coming out from a numbers standpoint. They don't have anything in the pot. That's why they had to lay off all those people. They're broke. Mm-hmm. And they don't really have all that much that they've licensed that will be a big blockbuster. So there's really, they're kind of in this vicious cycle where retail-wise, no one's buying from them, and Best Buy isn't buying from anybody at this point.
Yeah, they're returning everything, actually.
Yeah, and that's not making anybody any money right now. So Walmart is, stocking a little bit of stuff, but Walmart's Walmart. They're only going to take the cream of the crop anyway.
Yeah, Dragon Ball, that's it.
Yeah, Dragon Ball. They stocked Moribito.
Right.
And that's it. So really, there's very little opportunity for them to make big bucks back. Now, are they going to die immediately? Probably not. CPM hung on there for a good 2 years before they finally threw in the towel. But I don't think we're in a situation, media landscape-wise, where there is room for them to be what they once were.
Or to even really bounce back.
Yeah, because where do you go?
Yeah, I am surprised they didn't. I mean, I'm sure there's some kind of weird licensing thing. I don't know what's going on with it. I don't know why Ikitosen is not on the shelves right now. That should have been on the shelves a month or two after they announced the license. I mean, that's a money-making show. That sells.
Yeah.
It's been proven to sell.
Yes.
So I don't know why that's not out there yet. I can only speculate, so I won't go into it. But yeah, it doesn't make any sense that's not out, because that's their one chance to make money, I think.
The big problem right now, DVD-wise, for everybody, is that there are just not so many places to buy DVDs anymore.
Yeah.
FYE is, hanging on by a thread. Best Buy is cutting way back. Walmart only takes so much, and they're cutting back, too. Mm-hmm. And so what's left retail-wise? There is almost no good brick-and-mortar place to buy video anymore.
Yeah. And Best Buy still has a decent selection. Fry's still has a decent selection.
Fry's is regional.
Yeah, and it's regional, so it's not exactly everywhere. And I don't think I've bought anything from retail MSRP from an FYE in, five years.
I don't know why anyone buys full retail at FYE. That never made any sense to me.
Right.
But, yeah, in preparing for the worst, now, having been through this 3-4 times now, I would think that everyone's first instinct should be, run to Amazon, buy everything that's available while you still can.
Yeah, that's actually probably a smart thing to suggest. If there's a Media Blasters title you've been putting off and putting off and putting off, go buy it now, because it's not going to be there in a year. It probably won't be there in a year.
Even if Media Blasters proper is still around, if it's catalog, they're probably not going to want to do another print run.
Yeah.
So I actually prepared a short list, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. This, if you are just, you know, dipping your toes into Media Blasters water, these are the shows that you should snap up immediately while you still have a chance. Morabito, yeah. Which is phenomenal. I just got into that show. I forget if they called this... They didn't call this Club to Death Angel. I think they called it Bludgeoning Angel.
Yeah, Dokuro-chan or
whatever. Dokuro-chan, yeah. I thought it was funny. It's the same joke over and over, but it's funny. Figure 17, which is a cute show, and if you have an allergy to treacle, you might want to avoid it, but it's a cute little slice-of-life show. 12 Kingdoms, mm-hmm. Also a great, great, great show. I'm going to get shit for this. The edited version of Kite...
Okay.
I still think that's an amazing piece of work, and I think the porn version completely obscures what's a great story there.
Didn't the director, like, not even want to go back and put those scenes in?
Yeah, he had to put those scenes in to get it produced.
Right.
And Media Blasters then cut them out, and he prefers that version, and he redubbed that into Japanese and released that in Japan. So, honestly, it's a great... surreal piece of work. I'll go into it a little deeper another day. Midori Days, I still think that's amusing. Mm-hmm. And I know you were a big fan of Genshiken.
Yep.
I can't stand it, but...
Berserk should be on your list.
And Berserk. That's the last time.
Yeah. Hurry up and get to Berserk. Is Kenshin even still in print?
I don't know. But
if you find it, get it.
Really? You're recommending the TV
second
show?
Second season.
I would recommend the OVAs, but not the TV show.
Second season.
Too much filler.
The second season's like a masterpiece. It's like, okay. So good. Everyone thinks that. You're wrong! Okay.
I will succumb to your peer pressure.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the guest. All right. Okay, we're back. Our guests this week are Gerald Rathkob and Daryl Surratt from the Anime World Order podcast. Hey, guys.
Hey.
I guess this means this is the official second guest that you've had, or someone else,
yeah,
you know,
you're
come
our,
on here.
You're our first returning champion. So, hey.
I come cheap.
Congratulations on that. Hey, do you guys ever consider one of those celebrity pairing names? Because your names do work together. You could call yourselves like Daryl.
I think it's enough really, people really do annoying. That already.
Really?
A lot of people call me Gerald and Gerald Daryl.
It's incredibly annoying
similar...
because in a hallway, if someone yells out just Errol, then we don't know, which one of us they were calling for.
All you hear is the Errol part.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're having you on this week just to talk recent events. There's been some super fun shit happening this week, as you guys well know. This whole giant controversy with Funimation licensing the incredibly awkwardly and badly titled Dance in the Vampire Bund.
Did you have to look up Bund?
I still don't know what it is.
Hold on. I don't remember either. It's nonsense in that context. Absolutely nonsense.
I immediately just think of Bundt cake. Or bung, or the word bung, which is fun.
Right.
Assuming you guys saw this story, I'm just going to ask, what's your take on it?
I got kind of a twofold take on it. I think, on the one hand, I can sympathize with people from the high level, censorship is bad. I don't like to buy things that are cut viewpoint. But on the practical street level, I think they're kind of being petulant whiners. This isn't really stopping anyone from seeing the show uncut via their fan subs. I just typed a search for it right now. There's hundreds and hundreds of seeders for plenty of torrent sites for this show. Anyone who wants to see the show presumably knows about it and downloads anime online. Yeah, it sucks that maybe the DVDs will be edited, maybe not, but you can still get the show. Anyone who wants to see it can still see it uncut. So I think, practically speaking, there are more important things to argue about and, champion.
Gerald, what about you?
I don't even think my thoughts are that deep. It's more like, yeah, editing sucks, but they're editing out naked underage characters, if I remember correctly. And
but she's really 500, that's,
you guys. Oh, sure, yeah.
She only looks 9.
Wow, a kitty grade defense officer.
Really,
You know, I got to
pretty fucking creepy. So yeah, I don't think there's anything lost there. So
I got to say here, whenever you edit anime, it's going to cause a shitstorm. Especially yeah. an anime that people know what it is. You know, if it was like some crappy, half-forgotten OVA, no one would really be complaining too much. The way Funimation handled this was probably not very good.
Well, there's a new wrinkle in the story today.
Yeah,
I should mention that up front, that they have decided to not, I guess. They're saying, tentatively, we're not going to edit the DVD.
Yeah, so far.
Right, that's why I said maybe.
Yeah.
It leads me to believe that they saw that, freaked out, had a meeting, and, you know, cut it and released the PR. And then they saw the shitstorm, and they're like, I guess this wasn't so bad. Yeah, we've released worse. Rin was worse. We could release this.
Strike Witches will be worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, they had so much cover they could have gone under. They could have blamed the Chris Hanley decision. They could have worded this so many different ways. But to say that contained scenes that were not suitable for viewing within the United States.
Yeah.
That suggests, why did we license it in the first place?
It really does. And it also suggests some sort of, you know, clumsy attempt at censoring native Japanese-ness.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, people are going to get, you know, get their pants in a bunch over that. And, you know, not to mention the people that are against censorship the most tend to be so religious about it that once you utter the word, they just erupt into a firestorm.
Yeah, they blow their shit. I mean, I gotta say, like, my angle on this was, A, hilarious rage. Like, I was laughing my ass off when they made that announcement just because the fanboys lose their shit, and it's funny to me. Like, it's funny to me. Secondly, like, the whole censorship is bad in every single possible case. Yeah, okay, fine. That's fine if you're super religious about it, but I get tired of being vilified for not giving a shit. If you don't care, if you're like, I don't care if they edit out some underage kid getting oil rubbed on her in a salacious way. I don't care if they cut
first
that out.
First they came for the underage children anime, please, and I said nothing, Zach.
It's a Nia Mahler. It's just, I guess,
it's like a drinking game. You count down until someone brings that out.
Yeah, well, it's
thinking
funny
that they've won the argument.
And you get treated like, if you're not a hyper crusader, if you're not, you know, I'll defend to the death your right to jerk it to loli porn, somehow you're the bad guy. Like, you're the bad guy if you are not crusading for someone else's weird fetish. And I don't understand how he got to this point. Like, why, like, Daryl, you get vilified for shitting on moe stuff all the time, right?
Yeah, it happens. I mean, I think it's, you get painted with this unfair brush of, okay, you're the guy who hates everything, or you're the guy who only likes things that are really old, and it requires a sort of weird fanaticism of just shutting out everything else you say all the time to focus on the one thing that you disagree with, and then taking that and using that to characterize you overall. That just kind of strikes me as, okay, this person's an unreasonable fanatic. And yeah. I think a lot of the reaction to this is kind of a crazy fanaticism. But again, that's like I said, on the one level, I can see where they're coming from. But on the other level, it's kind of just making a big mountain out of nothing.
Well, you know, this is so not government censorship. This is two companies agreeing that releasing something in its current state, which, by the way, this isn't like some great artistic work we should put on some upper echelon. This is a clearly made for profit and for merchandising show.
Mm-hmm.
That was corporate designed by committee, like 90% of television anime is, deciding together that releasing this version is not in their best interest.
Right.
That's not a violation of the First Amendment. That's the free market.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, it's funny because I even hate using the word censorship because it doesn't feel like actual censorship to me. It's a company choosing to edit their own product. It's not like the government stepped in and told Funimation, no more lolis in your shows. Like, there's no third party here. Although somebody did argue that they somehow felt as though the company that created the show, Shaft, was being silenced in some way by this. I am assuming Shaft does not give a fuck.
No.
Nah.
Well, the licensor for this show is Media Factory. Media Factory approved this.
Right.
They're the representative for the production committee.
Right.
So if anyone would have said, hey, we have a problem with it, they would have who was in a position to say that, they would have gone through Media Factory.
My understanding is that, what I've heard is that America is one of the only countries that gives as enormous a shit about the censoring that comes from anime and manga as we do. That my understanding is that it's standard practice to edit manga for different Asian countries and such.
Right. But so, free speech. But my free speech.
Yeah.
The rape of Nanking, Gerald, it didn't happen.
Well, yeah, this is not a free speech issue. And that's why it pisses me off when they immediately try to turn it into a free speech issue. That's not what this is. One of the interesting things about this to me, Daryl, was your take on it that I saw. You got into it with Alex Leavitt. Is that guy?
Yeah, Alex is a cool guy. I mean, I was facetiously screaming about that in my full Iron Sheik style. But yeah, I mean, it was a quick little comment. I said that basically there are a whole lot of things for which if edits get made or something like that happens, there is no fan sub route you can take. There is no let me import from another country route to take. I have no alternative if there's an edited release of something that, say, I want to see, usually some, you know, obscure cartoon like, I don't know, whatever, the 2003 Astro Boy, which shouldn't be obscure, but it is. In that case, that's one example. It's the U.S. release is severely edited. All the music's changed, crop, pan and scan, dub only, yada, yada. There's no fan sub of that. I can't go and download an English fan sub. I can't go and easily import DVDs with English subtitles on them. There's some Korean DVDs I could get. But if I want to see that show, I can't because of the editing. You know?
Well, and that was an interesting argument for me because the general undertone that sort of came out, that always comes out of these arguments, whenever a show like this is edited or not released here or something like that, the general feeling seems to be that somehow the audience for those shows, the Moe fans, and it's fine, they can like what they like, I'm not judging them, but somehow they're being underserved, they're not getting what they want, they're once again being cast aside, they're once again being, you know, underserved. The entire industry seems to revolve around these people and their tastes. Like,
right,
it's fans like us, fans like the people speaking here today that are generally into different types of shows, like seinen shows and stuff like that. We aren't getting what we want. We are now the underserved audience. Am I right?
Right. I mean, there aren't 9 fan sub groups tackling the show that I want to see within a day of it being fan subbed. I mean, I just did a search just a second ago for, you know, Vampire Bond, and sure enough, there are tons and tons of groups offering this thing, you know, within days of the Raw coming out. You can get this show. Anyone who knows about it, you're internet savvy. If you're listening to this podcast, if you even know the show exists, you can get that fan sub. Whereas, you know, if there's some manga that I want to read, there's probably a good chance a lot of times no one's even scanlating it. No one's bringing it out officially in America. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's just I think the notion that somehow the Moe fans, even in America, are underserved, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that you can make that argument anymore. I mean, those people are getting what they want. I mean, you have Funimation, the biggest licensor in the U.S., releasing Strike Witches and Dance in the Vampire Nudity. I mean, those are hardcore niche titles for people who are really into lolicon stuff. So, I mean, yeah, you're getting what you want, right? I mean...
Well, what really kind of makes me chuckle at the impotent nerd rage is just how unaware of how impotent it is. I mean... Well,
apparently it's not.
Well, okay, it's not in this case, but what one has to remember is that if you're going to do significant numbers in the American market, you have to reach so far beyond the people that read us and anime on DVD and listen to Anime World Order and all that good stuff. You have to reach so far beyond that market that... who you're really selling to are people that don't even know we exist.
Right.
And in large degree, and this is a shame, but it's true, in large degree, the people that are the hardcore don't buy DVDs in numbers sufficient enough to really have a vote.
Right. So the audience, so not only that, that audience that is getting what they want, it's too small to really support the shows in a meaningful way.
The audience that complains is probably big enough to support a small sub-only release.
Gerald, you were going to say something?
Well, I was going to say, do you think that applies to releases like this? Because I would totally agree that it applies to stuff like Afro Samurai and, you know, really, really big releases that get, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands of copies out there. But this seems like something that... I doubt someone would go into Best Buy and look at the box cover on this and pick this up.
Well, hold on a second. I think this thing has Vampire in the name, and therefore they're going to try and grab that Twilight brass ring as hard as they can with this, is sort of their, you know, rationale for licensing any crappy vampire show. Just look at the Cartoon Network's lineup over the past years. Any crappy vampire anime that gets made would get thrown on the Cartoon Network, no matter how terrible.
See, I don't know that I agree with that. Funimation's marketing team is not dumb. And Dance in the Vampire thing is so far removed from even resembling Twilight. That audience is not going to look at the cover with a 9-year-old girl and her feet sticking out and go, oh, I wonder if this is like Twilight. That those two don't connect. I mean,
just vampires in general, Zach. Twilight was just the latest example. But I just was remembering, say, their release of Moonphase. Well, Moonphase was another sort of moe show about a vampire girl, and the way Funimation cut their trailer was to make it seem like it was this kick-ass action series.
I think Funimation's smart enough to know that not everything vampire does well. I mean, they saw their sales numbers for Karen.
Yeah. So, I mean, that brings us to another point. So I think we're all sort of agreed that this is not a free speech issue. The censoring thing is not a free speech thing. And so immediately leaping into that attack mode is kind of, I don't know, annoying. Everybody is in agreement on that?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I am with you, Zach, in that I am annoyed.
Right. So, now you guys just started doing your Decade in Review podcast, right?
The one that will hopefully end before the next decade. So.
Right.
March is what we're in now. And yeah, we're doing the 2000 to 2009 recaps that everyone savvy did in January.
Right. Yeah. Now, it's interesting to me that this controversy pops up, and we talk about how we, as fans like us, who generally aren't into that kind of thing, we're not necessarily getting what we want. Over the last 10 years, I mean, do you think that anime is just not for people like us anymore?
It's a little trickier than that. I think what has been happening, what we've been pointing out as we've been going through each year, is that the amount of productions has skyrocketed since 2000. I think the rough estimate we said was, okay, in the year 2000, there was about 80 shows made. And of that, maybe about 10 or 11 or 12 or so were ones we liked. And eventually that number has become now like 200 shows a year.
Yeah.
But the number of shows we like is remaining relatively constant.
Right.
So it's not like a case where people say, oh, anime is not as good as it used to be. And then someone else on the other side says, no, anime is as good as it's always been. That argument is sort of right and sort of wrong, because while it's true that the number of shows, quote unquote, for us, has remained constant, the rate at which those shows get made, the percentage, is dropping and dropping and dropping as a result of the anime industry catering to more progressive, hardcore, niche groups, of which I guess we're now one.
Well, you're not wrong. I do have to point out that the number of shows from 2 years ago until now has kind of halved.
Yeah. Production is
down.
Yeah,
it's tapering off now, sure.
Tapering,
but even still, we're looking at like 20 shows a season.
Yeah, it's, well, really? You like 20 shows a season?
No.
I said about getting made.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's about right.
That are actually being made. Now, a lot of people will argue that the golden age was in the late 90s, but then the argument gets made that, well, we weren't getting everything in the late 90s. And I have to ask Justin about this. Is there some mass number of shows that were on TV in the late 90s that were never fan-subbed?
Yes.
And are there jewels in there that people are missing out on that just have never gotten released, people don't know about? Because those have been completely forgotten, I would say, at this point.
I won't say definitively no, but no. I mean, we got, of the stuff that's licensed that would be marketable in the States, we got almost everything from about 1989 on.
Really?
There are occasional ones that, you know, the licensing didn't work out for whatever reason. And there are a few shows that I've just kind of, you know, kept my fan subs and guarded them jealously. But for the most part, no, we didn't miss a thing. There are quite a few OVAs from the mid-80s that we didn't get, but even those, pretty slim pickings.
Right.
We didn't get Scoopers, man. In California crisis.
Most unwatchable, unmarketable OAV ever. But
hey, you don't like watching Japanese people that obviously took a one-month vacation in California and decided to make an OVA out of it?
I think that kind of is, in a way, sort of indicative of what was going on. I mean, I think the reason that Golden Age moniker gets thrown about is just because the Japanese economy for anime, they just had more money to throw at stuff, you know? I mean, well, would you really see, like, some of these things even get greenlit today?
Well, absolutely not, but neither would we see Akira or Wings of Onyamas get greenlit.
Well, yeah.
That's really what sums up what happened in the 80s, and really the 90s were kind of a kind of grasping at trying to maintain, was that in the 80s, when you had this huge explosion of the home video market, all of the known talent were busy doing TV work that everyone knew was going to be a hit. So in order to fill the OVA market, all these 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds who really had no credentials and no real reason for people to think that they could pull off making an anime, suddenly got the chance to make whatever. I'll bet half of the proposals didn't even get read that got greenlit. And as a result, there was a lot of really experimental stuff that got released. 80% of it, unwatchable. But
and the rest of it was porn. And
porn, pulpy.
What a lot of them worked in as well, apparently.
A lot of it was porn. A lot of it was just pulpy and obviously very derivative of, like, Kuru Amerikajin no anime. Mm. You know, that's why we got so many Streets of Fire ripoffs.
Oh, God.
But, you know, but we got a couple real diamonds out of that investment in the youth. The youth that just had no credentials. That's how we got the Gainax guys. That's how we got Yuji Moriyama. That's how we got all the big name talent that came out of that boom. Then when the bottom fell out of the bubble economy in the early 90s, the production end switched to the production committee model so they could, you know, gather enough money to keep the momentum going. And now that the economy has cratered again, kind of running out of steam.
Yeah. So was there an equivalent to Moe? Like, what was the sort of filler that filled out a TV season in the 90s? So say, like, you know, 1995, you've got Evangelion on the air, you've got Escaflowne on the air, you've got whatever else that was quality that was on the air. What was filling up the space that now Moe is taking the place of that stuff?
A lot of kids.
The Brave series?
Yeah. Lots of kids with combining robots.
Harem comedies, maybe?
Well, I mean, Tenchi started, like, some craziness in, what, 94, was it, or 93? And there were just tons of Tenchi ripoffs, I seem to remember.
Yeah, well, the big difference from then to now is that there really is no OVA market anymore.
Right.
All that filler was OVA until everything went late-night TV.
Well, then Tenchi became
a lot of things
TV
that right. probably should have been maybe two- or three-part OAVs are now 13-episode TV shows.
And clearly they're just hanging on there for dear life. It's just like, we gotta fill 13 episodes.
So I guess, basically, things haven't really changed as much as people like to say. It's just that the filler material, the stuff that's sort of filling up the airwaves, it's not the super, you know, the stuff that we, you know, the one or two gems per season that people like us are into, that's the Moe, like, Moe has sort of taken the place of that stuff. It's just a different kind of otaku bait, you know, sort of filler material.
I mean, I would argue that in the 80s, like, one of the big filler things there was, I believe there were a whole bunch of, like, magical girl shows that came out in the 80s due to, like, Creamy Mommy and stuff, and we don't know about any of those shows today. And that was just kind of the otaku bait of that time.
But I think at least they made the attempt to actually make those shows for kids for real, as opposed to what we got now, where the only magical girl shows that really get made, maybe with the exception of Pretty Cure, are total otaku bait, like Nanoha sort of things.
I think one significant difference, though, is that because every aspect of the entertainment world other than outright big tentpole theatrical is cratering right now,
yeah,
I think the end result is that everyone is playing it pretty safe as far as what material gets greenlit.
Right, but you were saying that a lot of these Moe shows are falling flat on their face, like they're not making money.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, if you look at next season, you see not a huge decline, but still a decline in the number of shows.
Yeah, have you, Daryl and Gerald, have you guys looked at the new season, what's coming up?
I have looked at the new season, and a lot of it is, like you said, not really anything that seems like, oh, I got to watch that, with the exception of, you know, maybe there's a couple second season things of something or what have you. But yeah, there's not like a big laundry list of like, oh, got to watch that, unless it's like, oh, the next edition of currently established franchise here.
Well, looking at the chart, though, like, I see less pink. I don't know. about you guys, but I'm seeing less pink, less frilly dresses, less cutesy girls.
I think a big part of the problem in Japan is that they see less pink, but that's a different sort of...
Oh!
Heyo! Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's too early to call it a trend, but maybe we are seeing a little bit of tapering off of the moe stuff. Maybe they're deciding that's not the go-to money place anymore.
Well, one thing that I think Japan has realized en masse over the last year is that the number of people that buy that stuff, and they are dependent on the people that buy the ridiculously overpriced DVD releases of those shows.
And the character merchandise.
And the character merchandise. If you go to Akihabara, by the way, Akihabara, not a big deal. if you go to Akihabara, you just peruse the streets, and 90% of the anime stores are, like, the first floor is nothing but really outright pornographic vinyl models. And then the next two floors are full SRP, eroge, and hentai anime.
Right.
I think they're realizing that that market is about 300,000 people, and they're never going to break out of that if they keep making this crap.
Right. So they've got to try to expand again.
If they want to get back to anything resembling profitability and growth again, they're going to have to move beyond that tiny, tiny niche. And it is a tiny, tiny niche. We forget that.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, it's fine if that audience continues to get served. I'm glad they're getting what they want. I'm glad that they're getting the shows that they want and enjoying their television. That's fine. But I am very happy to see that at least this season, there are probably at least four shows I'm looking forward to checking out, which is more than it's been in the last couple years for a given season. So that's, to me, that's good news. I mean, I don't know.
And we'll see how many of them become Book of Bentora.
So actually, just to sort of bookend this thing, what are you guys watching lately that you're into?
I'm actually trying, you know, I'm very rarely watching the newest thing that's coming out, but I'm trying to finish up Shin Messenger and Macross Frontier from like a year ago. Also watching, I think I'm going to start watching Kaiji, which people have been recommending
great
to me
show.
Forever and ever and ever. So that's kind of the newish stuff that I'm checking out.
Daryl, what about you?
I typically do not like to watch things as they're coming out just because I've been burned so many times by the anime that starts off good and then it gradually declines and becomes terrible. And most people, myself included, just don't have the heart to just drop a show. It's like, I've already started watching it, I'm going to keep watching. So I wait for shows to end, then wait until someone says, okay, yeah, that show was good, and then I watch it. So really right now, because I'm going through going through the 2000s, just rifling off all these cool shows that either I missed or I forgot about or my friends haven't seen them, I'm largely going back and showing these things to people like it's totally new to them. Like I have one friend who just missed out on the last 10 years. So it's like, hey, you ever see this thing? It's called Read or Die. Check this out.
Oh, man.
You know, and so that's kind of where I've been lately. I mean, the newest thing I've been watching, and it's kind of dishonest to even really call it truly new, is that new Cobra show that nobody's watching except me.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're the one guy.
Yeah. I looked at the streaming stats you guys saw. It was like two people, and it was me, and then me downloading again, maybe. I don't know.
It was you accidentally hitting refresh.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Fucking Cobra. I don't know how you can stand that thing, man.
That show was dire.
It's not good. Please tell me what's good about Cobra.
I'm actually a big, big fan of Cobra. I just haven't started watching that new show yet, and so...
I like the original.
Yeah, it's actually one of my favorites, and the new series of the Psycho Gun was, in my opinion, amazing. So,
well then. So, now here's the thing. Here's a segue for you. Now, Daryl, you unironically love Cobra, right?
Sure.
Okay.
It's a good show. It's like James Bond. It's kind of got that whole Barbarella sci-fi aesthetic that's kind of completely gone.
And that everything is boobs.
Yeah.
Huge boobs.
Butt, Justin.
I'm
this
sorry.
Is a butt show.
Bones.
I beg your forgiveness.
The Donkey Donk production.
What an embarrassing mistake, Justin. Jesus.
Hey, not tea.
Okay, now that's something I really wanted to talk to you about because you've talked about this on Twitter and I've seen you talk about it online. You pretty much wholesale reject the notion of ironically liking anything, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that anyone who says, okay, I enjoy something because it's bad or, you know, whatever, that's still enjoying it. You don't really need another term or another qualifier unless you're actually concerned about what other people think. Although a lot of people who say they watch things ironically want to make it seem that they're, you know, cool for cats or trying very hard to not care that, you know, whatever. So they say, oh, this show's terrible. I'm just watching every episode of Jersey Shore, you know, ironically or whatever.
So you're not actually watching
it. I think they actually like it.
You're watching stuff because you like it, not because... Because I know you like terrible things. You love Angel Cop.
I like... Yeah, Angel Cop is great, though.
You love Mad Bull.
I love Angel Cop.
But there's no smirk at the end of that statement for you. There's no like, oh man, Mad Bull is great. You actually mean it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most people who... When they say, oh, this is, you know, so ridiculous and so stupid and dumb, you know, that's not really irony. You're watching it and you're enjoying it. And if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. Whether you enjoy it for whatever reason, you know, you can go into that all you want. But, I mean, if you want to say, try and pull this, oh, don't get me wrong, this show is bad and I wouldn't really be enjoying it. I'm just watching it because, you know, I just want to see how dumb it is. You know, that's... That to me is putting up, you know, a defense mechanism of, you know,
I think people are terrified of being seen as unsophisticated, and honestly, liking something that's bad seems that, like, you come off as a stupid, unsophisticated person. When, and for me, it's just, you know, you enjoy it. You enjoy it. I don't know.
I kind of get where you're going with this. I mean, I just downloaded this horrible mainland Chinese movie that was a ripoff of Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, wow.
I tried watching it. Oh, yeah, it's as bad as it sounds. The thing about it, though, is it's so bad, it's incredibly boring, which is...
Yeah, well, that's not even, like, entertaining, then. It's not like, you know, oh, it's so bad, it's good or whatever. No, that's just bad.
Exactly.
It's just a bad movie.
So my point is that I want you to... I want to see if you would agree with this. Would you say that if it was not boring and it was just this... silly, really low-rent Chinese dancing movie, you would find that entertaining in a way that is not ironic. It would be genuinely entertaining, even if it's terrible.
Sure. I mean, I think the ultimate measure of whether entertainment succeeds or not is, does this entertain me? Yes or no. If something fails to entertain you, it's bad entertainment. If something entertains you, for whatever reason, then it's good entertainment. That's pretty much as simple as that. I think... to go further into it, you can do that, certainly, and I do it all the time, because that's what we do. But, I mean, that's really what it all boils down to.
Now, see, here's the thing, though. Like, you mentioned Jersey Shore, which I watch that show. I don't watch that show ironically. I watch it because it is a hilarious train wreck of terrible people. That's not irony. I'm not watching it because, oh, this show is so bad. I'm watching it because it's an example of human terribleness, and I
relish in seeing that, you know, your life is far better than whoever these people are. I've never seen the show, but I understand that it's exactly what you say.
Right, Zach's life is far better because he doesn't have to take herpes medication.
But, I mean, it just – and then you – see, the thing is, and then you also rejected Mystery Science Theater. And I have to take issue with that.
That was a little different. Mystery Science Theater is one of those things where when it started, it was actually a pretty neat subversive kind of thing. You know, taking these horrible movies and making fun of them and being entertained that way because you're making fun of these movies. Unfortunately, it had the terrible side effect of contaminating every anime con video room ever since. But we'll let that slide. What I said was that if you are watching the various MST3K successors, the riff tracks, the cinematic Titanics and stuff, in 2010, yeah, you're probably a jerk because they've gone so far beyond that original concept of, you know, we'll send them cheesy movies, the worst we can find, to any movie that we can find and give it the same treatment, then you're just kind of spinning your wheels.
Yeah,
that was what I was saying there.
I mean, as a big Mystery Science Theater fan, I'm in complete agreement with you. It's just originally I thought you were saying like Mystery Science Theater. You're talking about its sort of toxic trail that it's left in its wake, not necessarily the show itself.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the people who grew up on Mystery Science Theater 3000 sort of like took that as like the default way to consume films. And so they just sort of like expanded it out to everything, which kind of is probably why, you know, there's so much demand for like, oh, I got to see the MST3K or the Rift Tracks or whatever for like There Will Be Blood or whatever it is that they got out there, you know, where it's like, does this really warrant that kind of treatment to have the Citizen Kane riff tracks, which exists.
Yeah, I know. And the funny thing is I've tried to watch one of those before. I tried to watch the one for the first Lord of the Rings movie. And there's not a whole lot to make fun of in that movie. You can make a couple of gay hobbit jokes and that's it. You're done after that because it's a good movie. And they're not funny. They're struggling to come up with things to say, but you still get some people who are like, oh, that was hilarious. I think it's just like anything that comes out of those guys' mouths that's directed at a movie, there's a crowd of people out there that will find it funny. And then the worst influence I think Mystery Science Theater has had is that it's made a legion of nerds think that they're as funny as those guys and will make jokes through movies, like you said. And they have whole con panels that are just that, right?
Yeah, it used to be a huge draw at other cons, like even Otakon, they used to do it. I mean, it was pre-recorded and, you know, written in advance, but, you know, they used to do it. And then eventually they decided, you know what? We're kind of running low on material. I mean, they were like having like Crusher Joe is the Mystery Anime Theater. I'm like, what are you talking about?
That was the last one, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Crusher Joe is fantastic. Why are you giving this the rip apart treatment? And it's because, you know, well, there's only so much, you know, of stuff that warrants that.
Well, the toxic thing for me is that it's really hard to write those things, and it's really hard to be funny. And being funny is a rare trait. It is not something that just any nerd who wants to make Portal references and 4chan memes during a screening of Crusher Joe, you know, that's not funny. You're not funny. And so sitting through I've never actually sat in on one of those panels because I know I would have, you know, murder suicide within about 10 minutes.
Zach clearly has so much tolerance for nerds that think they're funny and not.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly that's something you just enjoy.
Yeah, it's just this is the world's worst. And so, like, I guess I get what you're saying in that that's really the issue there. It's that influence. It's those people that you're saying, like, it's not ironic. You're not funny. Let's just enjoy things and not put up this bullshit posturing about how, oh, I'm only doing this ironically.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I sort of postulated, like, you know, when did this really explode? And for the life of me, and this is just my guess, I was thinking, like, around the time that the world was, like, waiting for Star Wars Episode One, and then they saw Star Wars Episode One, and their hopes were dashed against the pavement. And then, like, shortly afterwards, they were like, oh, well, The Matrix Reloaded. This is going to be great. I love The Matrix. And then they saw The Matrix Reloaded. And then eventually people were like, you know what? If I just say I don't care about the movie, I could never be hurt ever again. And so,
yeah, that's, you know, true. So it kind of killed passion. It kind of killed real interest.
Right. It wasn't cool to, like, actually care to show, like, oh, yeah, I'm really into this, because you run the risk of, like, something turning into total trash. Imagine if Iron Man 2 is a horrible film. What's going to happen? You know, it's just going to kill a lot of people inside, and they're going to be like, oh, man, I shouldn't even be letting myself get swept into this whole movie, TV, film kind of thing. I'll just say, like, it all sucks.
People's hopes weren't dashed immediately after they saw those movies, though. Like,
well, after The Matrix Reloaded, they were like, did I just see a bad movie or not?
Actually,
people loved The Matrix Reloaded for years. People were going wild for that for years.
People were in denial about Star Wars Episode One.
I'm just going to say, I unironically still love The Matrix Reloaded. I loved it when I saw it. I saw it like 4 times. I love that movie. I will admit, it is not a good movie, but I really like it and am entertained by it.
I really like that movie. Right, I own it multiple times over on DVD, and I own it in HD, I use liberal use of the chapter skip button, and I'll leave it at that.
That's true, and the third one is fucking horrible. Phantom Menace was the one that I walked out of going, well, that was okay. That was okay, right? Like, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, right, it wasn't as bad as I just thought it was, and then, you know, as the years go on, and then you realize, no, wait, it really was bad, and what was I doing all those years, like,
it wasn't
counting
even
down every second?
And it's funny because I went through that same exact cycle with Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, or I walked out going, well, that was pretty good, but the cycle now has wound down to, like, an hour. An hour later, I'll go, no, that was shit. That was shit, and, like, get really upset.
Now, how much of that is just being older?
I don't know, because that's...
Because you were, like, 15 at the time. 15, 20, somewhere around
there? I was in late high school, so like 18.
Okay.
When
my point is, you were still a teenager. Obviously, you still had kind of a doe-eyed perspective of the world and what it was going to give you entertainment-wise. Since then, you've, you know, had to eat dirt X number of times.
That's true. That's true. But weirdly enough, like, my parents loved that Indiana Jones movie. Like, they thought it was great. They didn't see any of the flaws in it.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on there.
But do your parents look at movies in the same way you do?
No.
Yeah, they probably look at it just far more like my parents do, which is just like basic entertainment. If it entertains them for 2 hours, that's all it needs to do.
Right, they're not getting really fucking upset and raging at the screen.
My mother enjoyed yeah. original Transformers movie, and I just, I don't understand.
Okay, well, I'm glad we got to the bottom of that. Okay, let's go ahead and get to Twitter. Here's a decent one from Shintaku. What trends do you think we'll be seeing in anime in the next few years?
Well, I would really like to say that Justin's correct, that they're going to see that, you know, this otaku niche pandering isn't the way to do it, that they're going to try and start, once again, making more general audience things. I don't know if it's going to happen. I kind of see the anime market turning into like an analog of the American comic book industry where, you know, rather than sell to grocery stores and mainstream places, they just decided we're going to target the direct market comic shop fans only. And what they just want to see is superheroes. And then they just let that iterate. And eventually those fans start writing the comics. And so they write the comics for them. Kind of like what's happening with anime. But I don't know how to break that cycle. I mean, but I hope I'm wrong.
I don't know. I kind of see a lot more of the U.S. Japanese things coming out. I think that I think Dante's Inferno did pretty well on DVD, and
wasn't
Batman
that
did pretty well. Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, there were two things done in Japan from that, weren't there?
Yeah, two. There was a production IG and a what was the other studio? Monglobe. That was a good one.
Monglobe. That's right.
And I heard that the Halo one was vile, but maybe it did some numbers. But
it was in the top 10 when it came out. Yeah.
Oh, it hasn't?
It was in the top 10 when it came out. I think it's in like number 15 now or something, which is pretty good. It was fucking terrible. But
I think it debuted at like number 2 or something, which is like, you know, pretty high for an anime release. Mm-hmm.
And those sorts of things, whatever moves numbers now, is what people are going to try to, you know, recreate in a few years when it's no longer profitable. So I think that's what we're going to see more of.
I really hold out major hope for Funimation's new co-pro division.
Yeah.
I really hope that goes somewhere.
Actually, I was just looking at the chart for this coming season, and on that list is the Iron Man anime.
You know what? I think a lot of those Madhouse Marvel co-productions have been good once they started going to Madhouse. A lot of the initial Marvel straight-to-video animated things were pretty bad, and then once they started going with Madhouse, I thought they've really picked up. I liked Planet Hulk. I liked even the Hulk versus shorts, the OAVs sort of things that they did. Those were surprisingly well done. I liked Hulk versus Wolverine more than X-Men Origins Wolverine.
What about the Marvel Toei stuff like Dracula?
Oh, yeah. Well, Dracula, Sovereign of the Damned, you know, they got to bring that back and bring Blade into it.
I'm detecting a hint of irony in your voice, Daryl.
Well, no, it's not really that, because I believe they are, in fact, making a Blade anime.
Yeah, they are.
Part of that co-production deal.
They are. But as direct as that is, it's like, okay, this is for Americans. I want to see that. I'm interested in the Iron Man anime. I think it'd be cool. And I want to see like the Japanese influence on American franchises. That's interesting to me.
The only way Yoshiaki Kawajiri will get work anymore.
The worry I have about all that stuff is the same thing that we saw with Kawajiri doing the
Highlander.
Well, where
way too much U.S. studio interference. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, what we really would like to see, and I think we're all agreed on this, is Japanese creators being able to take the ball and run with it of their own accord, not kind of being remote controlled from Hollywood, which I fear will happen quite a bit more than it doesn't.
Yeah. That's kind of what happened to Batman Gotham Knight as well. I mean, a lot of the U.S. side of things kind of stepped in. There's all kinds of stories floating around about what happened with that Deadshot segment, which I'm 97% certain was a Kawajiri thing, even though his name is not on the piece. But yeah, I think a lot of that is due to U.S. meddling. And if the co-productions go on and they say, here's the money, Japan, make something cool, then I'm cool with it. Once they start like putting their fingers in the pie, so to speak, too much, that's when there's trouble.
Justin, what do you think is around the corner besides the Funimation co-productions?
Well, I really see, I hope, and it's too early to tell if this is going to happen, but I really hope this happens. Summer Wars was kind of a surprise hit.
Mm-hmm. Great
movie. And I don't think anyone was expecting it to do the kind of numbers it's done. It opened, when it came out on DVD, it was tied with Eva 1.0.
Yeah.
It was pretty close. that's a huge hit. And that's a movie that actually didn't do all that great in theaters. What I'm hoping the end result is we see a bigger push in the kind of Neo Miyazaki realm. And we're starting to see that a little more in feature films, with stuff like the forthcoming The Space Show, with Oblivion Island, stuff that is clearly aimed at a family audience, not necessarily a children's audience, but basically going after the Pixar model.
Right. That'd be great if we got more of that stuff.
I think we're moving in that direction. I think there's only a couple directors that know how to pull it off at the moment.
All that talent went into video games instead.
Well, yeah. The thing is that we got to remember, though, is that even though for the last 10 years there hasn't been a lot of new talent in anime, all it takes is one big hit for it to look like a good idea again, and then you get a bunch of 20-year-old kids who might be good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. From Rob Comet 1, you referred to director Kazuki Akane as talentless. What do you feel makes him talentless?
This was for Gerald specifically. I don't have a particular axe to grind with the man.
I'm just not a big fan of the man. He did some shows that I've just got a very big beef with. I know that you're a really big fan of this, but he did Escaflowne and he did Heat Guy J. And
oh, Heat Guy J, they love that show on the Ancast, man.
Have you not
can't
been
get
listening?
Enough of it.
Just comes up in every fucking episode.
Yeah.
The original creator, Kazuki Akane, Heat Guy J.
Yeah, I think my big beef comes with especially when I saw like the Escaflowne movie, where, you know, he had now made you know, lots of a big name with doing the Escaflowne TV series. And the movie just bothered me in so many ways. Not even just like how the way the Escaflowne TV series bothered me, but it just like the dialogue just seemed so overblown, and just everything about that seemed like a really bad production for the amount of money that he had going for it. But I don't know. Maybe talentless is harsh, but I'm going to stick by that.
All right. Well, this next thing actually does kind of proves to me that your taste is in question anyway. According to Ed Sizemore, you hate Millennium Actress?
Gerald
yes,
hates
I
Millennium
do.
Actress. I think Millennium That's... Actress is Satoshi Kon's best movie.
Yes,
do I.
I do. I absolutely hate that movie.
You're going to have to explain that.
Yes. My big problem with that movie is that I do not like those two guys, the two reporters. The one guy who was interviewing her, I can absolutely understand that he gets caught up in all of her, you know, when she's telling her stories of her background life, and that I can totally understand. But the other guy wasn't into her in the beginning, and in the end when he left, he still wasn't into her. But he was stuck there all the time, and it bothered me a lot. And I think that just stuck with me the entire movie, and I thought, if these guys weren't there, I would have probably enjoyed this whole thing a whole lot more.
Wow.
I don't even know what to say to that.
I'm speechless as well. That's... Okay, moving on.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, you explained
it. Not a popular opinion, I know.
No.
Okay, dude.
I was quelling the rage in my head by replaying the soundtrack.
Okay, from Vicious Smith, question for Daryl and Gerald. What movie would you have given a Best Picture Award to in 2009? Speaking of the shitty Oscars this last week.
Oh, God.
Well, gee, I mean, I didn't even watch the Oscars. I mean, I know it's fashionable to say that, but I don't watch the ceremony. I just read the results, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, The Hurt Locker, that wasn't bad. It wasn't Avatar, so it's, you know, that's a win for, as far as I'm
yeah.
concerned.
Hey, I actually like Hurt Locker, with no irony.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a good movie, but I mean, you know, it's just like...
Well, I think he wants to know what you personally would have given Best Picture to.
Oh, what was my pick? Well, there was, of course, the criminally overlooked Black Dynamite, which should have won, you know, several awards, probably. And, of course, a Ninja Assassin, robbed for Best Picture, in my opinion. I think that was probably... most entertaining film I've seen in a long time. But, you know, the other ones, the nominees were okay, too. Up, I thought. I was very glad that won.
Yeah.
I was completely on board Christoph Waltz winning for Inglourious Basterds. Like, the second I saw it, I was like, okay, give that man his award because, you know, goddamn. And so, I mean, I didn't really follow the Academy Awards, like, obsessively. I saw that Zach was, like, truly alive during that broadcast. Like, his Twitter updates were like, wow, he's really totally into it. This is, like, the love.
The Oscars have been a hobby of mine since I was 15 or so. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a fun thing. The Oscars are just fun. They're fun to follow. This year's ceremony was garbage. It wasn't funny. I don't know how they managed to make Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin not funny. And the results were completely predictable, and they've been predictable for about a month now. Like, there were no surprises. So that's
Precious
what made it
didn't in. Win as many awards as it could have won, so I was like, okay, it's a win. I remember when I was listening to your decade in review, and you were bookending it with what were the best picture recipients over the years, and I was like, wow, a lot of these are terrible movies. No wonder I don't watch the Oscars very much.
It's true, and honestly, I've steered clear of Precious because it looks like it basically looks like a bunch of lazy stereotypes and terribleness, but I have to admit, I kind of want to give it a chance now.
Just because
I'll probably hate it.
I'm just happy.
You also have to say the full title of the movie.
Oh, right. Precious based on the book Push by Sapphire. Yes.
Novel Push by Sapphire.
Right.
And it's not Sapphire like the late ballet of Dusty Rhodes. Some other Sapphire.
That's as bad as a Japanese putting tildes and everything.
Yeah.
F.
Yeah. All right, that's enough Oscar talk. Although, Gerald, you didn't. What would you have given Best Picture?
I really, really enjoyed Up. If I had complete control, I would have gone back and pretended that the Wrestler came out in 2009 and given that Best Picture.
It did. It was just called Crazy Heart this time.
Yeah. But it didn't get Best Picture.
No, it didn't.
Love for District 9 and your fellow countrymen?
Gerald? I know. I like that movie, but I didn't love it. So
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, I actually bought
that. I thought it was all right.
I bought the Blu-ray, and you know how when it came out, everyone was like, wow, they only had $30 million to make that? Like, it looked good. On Blu-ray, you can totally tell it's budget CG. And, like, I'm really surprised it got nominated for Best Visual Effects, because they're not that strong. It looks okay. It doesn't look bad, but it looks like a $30 million effects picture.
Yeah.
And I think I'm the only person that was not rooting for Up. I wanted Fantastic Mr. Fox to win Best Animated.
I never saw that, and I heard good things. I'm not necessarily a big Wes Anderson fan, but I did
stand
hear
Wes Anderson.
I hate him too, but I enjoyed this immensely.
Yeah, well, it's out on DVD at the end of this month, so you guys should check it out. Okay, from RJ Miley to Daryl, and I guess me, what do you think of the state of anime podcasts today? And what do you think of other podcasts such as Anime Pulse?
You know, should we tell them what we submitted as a panel for Otakon? Because I think that's sums it up pretty well.
Yeah, the panel we submitted for Otakon was entitled "What Happened to Podcasting?"
Yeah,
that's what the state of podcasting is nowadays. It was supposed to be the big thing that was going to take off and be like the new media. It was the word of the year for 2005, and now podcasting is just kind of what the heck is that?
No one can figure out how to make any money off of it, and therefore it's just, I mean, the biggest people in the industry cannot make money on it.
That's actually not entirely true. There are right now there's one. There's one major podcast that they have figured out how to monetize it. It's Adam Carolla. The way he monetizes it is by doing his podcast live at improv locations. They charge $25 a head to get in. They record the show. They put it out there. They do two shows a night. The second show, if you want it, you have to pay $2.99 for it to get the podcast.
Carolla is already famous.
Yeah, right, you know? Exactly. That's the only one that's making money for us. And it's not going to work for anybody else. But I'm just saying, that's the only example I've seen of someone actively monetizing a podcast.
If I may go off on a little bit of tangent here, I was talking to our ad sales guy about that. And, you know, he, as popular as Ancast is, he's having trouble too, because advertisers look at podcasts and they're like, well, they can't click on the ad.
Yeah.
There's no way to tell if it's working or not. And it's kind of like going back to radio, which we're trying to get away from.
Yeah.
The ads are there permanently, and the audience pretty much a captive, dedicated audience that is definitely interested in your product.
The permanent ads are actually a negative, believe it or not, because there's no way of controlling how many people see it.
Right.
Or hear
but
it.
Yeah, I mean, to answer the other person's question, like, what do we think of these other podcasts? This is obviously, you know, a big attempt to get people to say, oh, the other anime podcasts suck. But no, really what it is, like, I love that Anime Pulse exists, and, you know, these other anime podcasts as well, Otaku Generation, Fast Karate, so on and so on. There's like 80 of them, because they get to talk about all the stuff that's out right now that I don't have time or inclination to watch necessarily, and all the audience for that, whatever it is, they go over to those guys, because I can't serve that audience, you know?
Yeah, people listen to Anime Pulse that people that listen to Anime Pulse would never listen to our show.
Well, there's some overlap. But I mean,
there's a little bit of overlap, but we don't talk about the newest episode of Naruto and the newest episode of Bleach every episode. So.
Right, but podcasting isn't a competition. It's not like it's a ratings war where it's like, oh, you either watch one TV show or at the expense of watching whatever else is on at that time.
So your
this is like on demand all the time.
So your compliment is, I'm glad the other shows exist.
Well, no, the compliment is that they're also, you know, very much more timely than we are. They've got a much better work ethic.
Well, shows like Dave and Joel I admire because those guys have got a really, really great back and forward. We could never support each other in a joke like those guys do. So Dave and Joel, I mean, that's my compliment to them is that I think that they are funny most of the time.
Here's what I'm going to say. When we first started anime podcasting, there were other podcasts out there, and they were all pretty much very, very similar to one another. Since then, the amount of new podcasts and the amount of different aspects of anime fandom that each of these anime podcasts get to cover can be unique, such that, you know, we're not, like, cutting into each other's turf, man. It's like one side can talk about this part of anime, another side can talk about that part, another one can talk about the industry, and so on and so forth, and everyone can kind of exist together. So I think that it's good in that sense. That's my compliment.
Meanwhile, Justin and I will sit in our privileged ivory tower and get the industry guests that no one else can.
Right. You live in L.A. It helps.
It does. I won't lie.
We like our ivory tower. Okay, so... Actually, so you guys would recommend Fast Karate then?
Well, yes. I would recommend anime podcasts. Their video game podcasts tend to spoil the game in its entirety. Like, I know you just started playing Final Fantasy XIII, Zach.
Yeah.
I'll lay odds that, like, the next episode of Fast Karate will be about the ending of Final Fantasy XIII. Because, you know, they'll just play it obsessively
I think
until
I could probably
they beat
guess
it.
The ending of Final Fantasy XIII pretty easily. But, yeah. Gosh, I wonder if they saved the world.
But I'll bet it'll be very pretty.
Yeah. Actually, that game is fucking gorgeous. Okay, from Chimera Man. In response to Justin's comments a few shows back about the lack of gateway drugs or introductory anime, what titles would you use from the last decade to introduce anime to the next generation of fans?
Monster, that's
really?
My first answer. I mean, it's not like my only answer, but I mean, that's one.
Depending on the fan, I think Read or Die would be a great way to start.
The OAVs, short, not the TV show.
The OAVs, yes. It's short, it's a lot of action, and I think that...
It's not very mired in Japanese cultural references. You don't have to know a lot about Japan, necessarily, to get into it. These are things that make things accessible.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that needs to get made. I mean, there are other good shows, a lot of good movies, but that's something to consider, you know, the global appeal of something, as far as, like, this is the gateway drug, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and say Summer Wars. And that's something I would recommend to anyone I know that likes movies. You know, it's just a good movie. It doesn't have any... I mean, yeah, it's anime-like, but it's just a good movie. It's something I could give to somebody. They don't need a point of reference to get into it. All they need to know is what social networking is.
Depending on how pretentious and artsy, I'd probably say Mind Game.
Really?
Yeah, I use Mind Game fairly often. I mean, I've even got, like, some friends right now who they heard me review Mind Game. Like, I reviewed it years ago, but they just heard the review, and they're like, I gotta see that movie. And yet, Mind Game has never been even considered for a release in America, as far as I can tell.
It's been considered.
Yeah, I'm sure it's been considered.
Yeah, well, it hasn't happened. But, I mean, it's not like it's stopping us, because, hey, you can easily see Mind Game, anyone who wants to, right now.
Hey, I picked up the used Region 2, which is subtitled at Booka for $10.
Yeah, perfectly professional English translation on that subtitle track.
Okay, second question from him. What do you think of Code Geass and its surging popularity, ranging from typical merchandise to a musical?
Gerald is the one who immensely hates that, and I think this person must have known that when they asked that question.
They wouldn't have asked that for any other reason. We watch it at our anime meetings, and whenever I watch it there, rather than spouting how much I hate it, I just go onto Twitter and just vent my rage about it. It's a terrible, terrible show, and the entire title of it, like the Geass, is this crux that the show uses that so badly. I mean, it's a show that is designed very, very carefully to get the widest audience possible. And when they saw that that audience was not wide enough for the second season, they expanded it a little bit more. And then, I mean, it's kind of insulting to think that they are going to appeal to male fans by just having a lot more shots of girls in bikinis, because that was pretty much absent from the first season. But it's just a very badly plotted show, very, very, very contrived, annoying crap.
I've never seen even a single episode of that show.
Wow, you haven't seen even a single episode? I mean, I got some hot water regarding Code Geass myself when I said I didn't consider it a mecha show. And part of my reason was I said it's not a mecha show if it doesn't have the name of the mecha in the title. And, of course, people got on my case for that. But another reason is that I don't – even though it's got these robots called Nightmare Frames – that are in each episode, my personal definition of mecha thing, other than if the robot's in the name, is are they central to the resolution of the conflicts? And in the case of Code Geass, the answer is no. The real resolution of conflict occurs, as Gerald said, through the use of, you know, I have the ability to, you know, tell you to do whatever you want, and you have to do it kind of thing.
Well, and the key is to tell you whatever you to do, what you have to do once, and then use it badly every single time. But
that's how the conflicts are resolved. It's not resolved. Like, you know, you could say, oh, well, shows in the 80s were also about the people. But at the end of the day, you know, Amuro Ray had to get in the robot and fight the battle of, you know, Abba Aku or whatever.
Well, they do do that in Code Geass as well. Like, they have to have fights pretty regularly. And so I would disagree that it isn't a mech show. I think it is a mech show, but it's just a shitty one.
Well, from the sound of it, it's an everything show. They're just throwing everything in there they think is going to sell to somebody. Justin, have you ever seen that show?
I saw the first couple episodes, and I'm going to put this out there that the whole reason there's a stage show is because the show has a lot of Fujoshi bait.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely.
That is absolutely true, and I think that they desperately needed more guys, so then in the second season, you see more tits.
If a show has a stage musical, chances are it's because it's slashable.
Mm-hmm. And it's coming soon, the Legend of the Galactic Heroes stage show.
we'll review that show at some point, and I'll go into more detail as to, you know, why it's just such a piece of crap.
What show has more stage musicals?
It's not LGH.
Hey, yeah.
What show has more stage musicals than any other? Prince of Tennis. I rest my case. Yes.
I'm as shocked as you are. Hey, I thought that was a Shonen Jump production. That's supposed to be for boys, right?
Boys that have, you know, decided to come out.
Okay, final question. Last one from Kent Ward. It's for Gerald and Daryl. You both travel to many conventions on the East Coast while doing events. From what have you seen, do you think anime conventions do an adequate job of promoting anime?
No.
I think the answer is no.
Not at all. I don't think
anime
that
conventions aren't concerned with promoting anime anymore. That goal might have been the initial, you know, idea with the foundation of clubs and such, but nowadays I guess the perception is with BitTorrent and streaming and everything being so prominent with anime on DVD and on some extent on TV, they're like, there's no need to promote anime. Now we can just promote pop culture. Any pop culture. Because, you know, hey, that's still a ticket bought.
So you're complaining about the purity.
It's not really a purity thing. I just think that, you know, if you go to an anime con, you're not really going there to watch anime. You're not really going there to really... Most people don't go for panels. I mean, that's what I go for. It's to put them on and to attend. But most people are just kind of there as like this sort of like impromptu mall that got set up. You know,
it's more like just a party for a lot of kids and just a place to get attention.
It's where, you know, the teens hang out.
Yeah.
Or at least it was.
I mean, how would you promote anime at an anime convention? It seems like, I understand the idea behind it, but it seems like you would promote anime at a sci-fi convention.
Well,
anime at, you know, at another convention where people aren't coming to it who already know what it is.
Well, it's kind of an antiquated concept that began with the SPJA, which that is their mission statement, is to promote Japanese animation. You know, that's sort of their acronym. And so the point of AX initially was to promote anime, get people interested in anime, get local media to cover anime. And, you know, over time it has become, as we've said many, many millions of times, Teenage Party Weekend. So conventions don't really serve that purpose anymore. I don't even think their goal is to promote anime at all. Like, I don't know. What do you
think their goal is to promote whatever musical act they were able to convince to show up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
SPJA needs to promote some new managers.
They need to promote a competent management structure. Okay, guys. Well, that's about it. That's all we've got time for. Anything you guys got coming up you want to plug?
Pretty much, we're just getting set for the con circuit. If anyone's going to Anime Boston, we're descending on that in full force. And, you know, we're going to scream. Maybe you'll learn something as I show, like, clips, you know, Neo Tokyo exploding or whatever it is that we got lined up for you there. But yeah, I mean, we're doing podcasts, and by popular demand, we made them shorter, and, you know, they're coming out kind of on time, on a schedule, so, you know, thumbs up to us, you know, for being, like, you know, responsible-ish.
And they can find that, and please throw out your URL so people know where to go.
Certainly. We got www.animeworldorder.com, and of course, my articles in Otaku USA Magazine are coming out, you know, every 2 months. We're still alive, and the website's getting cooler now, too, otakuusamagazine.com. So check those out, and twitter.com/Daryl Surratt if you want to see me waste a lot of time.
And I guess twitter.com/SeverenceD, that's me. And depending on what we get approved for Otakon, we'll be doing a lot of panels or no panels there. Depending, that all depends, I guess, on if the panel committee likes us or not. So,
right. Okay, cool. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks again for having us on.
Sure thing.
All right, that'll about do it for us this week. That's our show. I want to thank Daryl and Gerald for joining us again. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes. And we'll see you all next week.